Good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is Lawrenson v. Lawrenson. Mr. Soule, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is John Soule and I represent the appellant David Lawrenson. This is an appeal out of the Saunders County District Court in a divorce matter, and the issue is really a single error that we are alleging, and that is that the trial court erred in dividing Mr. Lawrenson's City of Lincoln pension plan, which covered pension and health. During the marriage, Mrs. Lawrenson paid into Social Security. Mr. Lawrenson did not. This court has had an opportunity once before in Webster versus Webster to visit a similar situation where Mr. Webster worked for the City of Omaha and Mrs. Webster had Social Security funds. In that case, this court decided that, and correctly so, that it could not use a direct set-off of Mrs. Webster's Social Security funds against Mr. Webster's pension funds with the City of Omaha. There were other issues in that case, though, which made it inequitable to do so. But the direct ruling of this court was no direct set-off. And that follows, I believe, 42 United States Code Section 407, and, of course, the United States Constitution, Article 6, Clause 2, the Supremacy Clause, which clearly says you cannot take those matters into account in dividing the marital estate. In Lawrenson, Mr. Lawrenson made no effort to value the contributions that Ms. Lawrenson made to her Social Security. To do so would be to violate that Supremacy Clause, to try and figure out what dollar for dollar actual contributions she made would be an attempt for a direct setup. What he has argued is that, look, you do not consider Mrs. Lawrenson's Social Security contributions. By the same token, you should not consider those contributions that I made to the City of Lincoln in the same proportion. Now, that changed during Mr. Lawrenson's tenure as a firefighter. Originally, he was contributing exactly what the Social Security contribution would have been, which is 7.65%. Somewhere along the line, after he was hired by the City of Lincoln, it went up to 8%. What we said is that the 7.65%, which matched Social Security, shouldn't be considered. But any amount above that would be available for a distribution. And the only reason we said that is if it matches the Social Security, fine. If an individual under a city plan or a government plan is given the opportunity to put more money in it, then that's above and beyond what Social Security is, so you can consider that.
Would your argument be the same if the opposing side, if the opposing party, had no earning record whatsoever and thus no entitlement to Social Security?
Yes.
Why?
Well, because if you deal with Social Security funds pursuant to the Supremacy Clause as being untouchable, so would the amount that the spouse put in for his city pension fund.
As though it were Social Security, but indeed it is not Social Security.
That is correct.
So it's a hypothetical Social Security payment.
It's treated similarly. It's treated equitably, what we'd argue. But back to your question, why would we do that? It's because, remember, Social Security was never intended to be a know-all, be-all retirement plan. And the little notices you get sent out say, hey, this isn't it. This is basically a subsistence living. Now, that doesn't mean
I want to be clear about this. In my hypothetical where the spouse has no earnings, no Social Security, you're saying you would still treat your client's quasi-Social Security or what he would have contributed for Social Security or substitute for Social Security as if it were Social Security and exclude it from the marital property.
I would.
And thus, the spouse in that situation would not share in that portion of the... Isn't the sort of the fairness argument in this case, isn't it premised on the fact that she did earn Social and will be receiving Social Security?
Part of it, but remember, you're talking property division. That's not the sole issue that the trial court will consider. The trial court would also look at alimony and income for the parties.
But go back just to focusing on the pension, if you would. I think you're taking the position that, well, let me ask you, is his pension plan an asset of the marriage?
Yes, it is.
So that it is in the marital estate?
Yes.
Is her Social Security are her Social Security contributions an asset of the marriage?
It is.
And what's your authority for that?
I believe it's 42.366 subsection 8.
Are they not an expectancy rather than a solid asset?
Well, I think this court had an opportunity to view that once before, and the case is cited in my brief. Your pension is an expectancy. You know, in the good old days, it's not guaranteed. If I invest in some mutual fund or some pension plan that is offered through my employment, that I'm actually going to get that.
Well, but the structure of Social Security depends on the, willingness of Congress to do whatever it does.
Right. It can, for example, borrow against Social Security funds, which is why it is going to go belly up or cease to be solvent sometime after I retire, thank goodness. But, yeah, they can do what they want with it. However, there's no guarantee that if you invest in a pension plan, you're going to get 9-1 off of that. You know, there's a number of things that can happen which would take away from
But it is a current asset at the time of property division. I mean, I think your argument is going to that what you would seek, and I do understand this, is that when they reach retirement, the property would be equitable.
Correct.
Rather than a property division at this point in time, which is the primary focus.
Well, yeah, and I think you've pointed out a major difference in how the appellant treated the Social Security and how the appellee treated the Social Security in the brief. We say that you, in Webster versus Webster, did not exclude it from the marital estate. What you said is that you can't consider it in the division. First, the steps are identify or classify. Is it a marital asset or non-marital asset?
Not a marital asset. Isn't that it? It's out.
No, I don't think so. When you look at the statute is so broad as to, in my opinion, include Social Security funds. But you still can't touch it. That doesn't mean that it's not a marital asset, and that isn't what was said in Webster. At least that's the way I've interpreted Webster.
What have the other states said? What did Mueller say in Illinois? An asset under the Illinois state statute, rather so it's just not on the table.
That's correct. But unfortunately, Mueller isn't the only case out there. And I think Nebraska has been cited kind of all over the case for the same proposition. I don't think it is all over. I think it's pretty clear what you said. But what you guys had indicated is it's not subject to a direct setup. Not that it can't be considered. You know, if you take
a look... Counsel, you used the term Social Security funds a moment ago as a marital asset. Are you talking Social Security contributions or the expectant money is the asset? Which is it?
Well, it's actually the contributions.
Okay, contributions.
Which we did not attempt to value, because if you do that, then you're either trying to set it off, make an offset, or make a parallel distribution, which we tried to explain to the court that's not what we're doing.
But you're claiming going forward Social Security contributions should be a marital asset that's divided by the court.
No. I'm saying it's a marital asset, but not that it should be divided by the court. We agree that you could not divide it in Webster, and you cannot divide it here.
But you are saying with respect to a portion of his contribution to his pension plan, which isn't really Social Security, but is in lieu of Social Security, should be treated like Social Security. It should be present valued and taken out of the estate?
No. Okay. I didn't say present value that. What I said is
help us out.
Anything above that
okay.
should be subject to division. See, originally it was contribution 7.65%, then it went to 8%. That 30.35% is subject to valuation. I don't think somebody should benefit because he's in a city plan. But if you're going to treat these funds as untouchable, in other words, if you're going to give her everything that she did in Social Security, but then take his and divide it in half and move that to her side,
if she were, excuse the hypothetical, to be deceased before her eligibility, what would happen to the contributions she made to Social Security?
Well, there would be a surviving spouse ability for him to recover from. But if you look at the city plan, if he were deceased, there is a surviving spouse benefit as well.
So there's a potential for derivative benefits under the Social Security statutes.
And under the
if
city
he plan. Were not remarried and so forth.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Krieger, good morning.
Good morning, Justice. May it please the court. First, I'd like to address the one statement of counsel that there is no authority that Social Security benefits currently received or to be received in the future are marital assets subject to division. They are not a part of the marital estate. They are not subject to division. The supremacy clause of the United States Constitution.
Okay. So she gets all of her Social Security benefits that accrue and are not divided. Can the court make an adjustment to the amount of the husband's pension plan that will then be payable to the spouse without resulting in some type of conflict with the supremacy clause or whatever?
No, and I think this court
we're on an equitable distribution of the property.
You cannot do a set-off. You cannot do an offset. And as it says in Webster, if you're going to have a court of equity, consider first Social Security benefits, then the only equitable way to make a division is to offset certain amounts that he has contributed in some other asset.
So here's where I go a little crazy, and only one of the ways in which I go a little crazy, but we're using set off and offset, but the point I think in the cases is that you can't do indirectly what you can't do directly.
And that is precisely what says in Webster. As a case I read said, you know, calling a duck a horse does not change the fact that it's still a duck. And here, what the appellant has always argued is...
Well, that just clarified it completely for me.
What the appellant is saying is that I want to take and value her Social Security for purposes of a division. Let's figure out what's in the marriage. We know his pension's in the marriage. Her Social Security benefits are not. And so he says, well, I'm not going to value hers, but I want you to give him every dollar he contributed, would have contributed to Social Security if he'd been in the system. That's not the value of a Social Security benefit. There's no $200,000 sitting in some account that I'm going to get to draw on. You don't fill out a financial statement for a bank and list as an asset the money I paid into Social Security, and that's what he's asking for, a dollar-for-dollar set-off, what he would have paid into Social Security, which he did not. And so if you were going to do an equitable balance sheet, you would have to say he is, in fact, valuing on her side of the scale her Social Security benefit to be an amount equal to what he would have.
As though it was were in the proverbial lockbox.
Right. The Al Gore lockbox. That's exactly right.
So you
and
can't
it's
do
not. They are completely unrelated. It's meaningless.
You can't do indirectly what you're prohibited from doing directly. So you're saying he couldn't have signed a prenuptial agreement that said this about the pension plans and her Social Security, and that wouldn't be enforceable?
Well, there's a whole other line of law on the
prenuptial,
which clearly you could deal with the pension in a prenuptial agreement, and it would be enforceable if all these other factors, such as time to consider it and all those other reasonable things. But in the
California Supreme Court has said you can do a stipulation between the parties, even though it's a community property state and they have statutes that make you have to be 50-50.
Right.
We're not an absolute 50-50 state. So that injects discretion in between the parties if they're agreeable.
And and there is some law here in Nebraska that does make this interesting to me, and that is the Dinges case at the Court of Appeals took the language out of Webster, where in Webster they were saying some states are doing this, we're allowing an equitable consideration. Some states are doing this, they are not allowing an equitable consideration, and you found that if you're going to allow an equitable consideration, you still, in the end, means you're taking money from one spouse who's receiving Social
Security.
But
that was a lump sum disability award. You could point to an absolute receipt.
Right. But then they quoted favorably the part of the Webster decision, the language of the Webster decision, that essentially held the opposite of what you found in Webster. And in fact, there are cases out amongst the other states where Nebraska is a state that absolutely bars under Webster any consideration, and there are states that cite Nebraska favorably under Dinges that you can consider it. And I think that
the nature of the property is different between Webster and
Dinges.
Well,
and in Dinges, we had cash in the bank. I mean, it was a
$27,000
Social Security
award.
Lump sum already in the bank. It was a tangible asset. Here, what is the value of the Social Security benefit I'm going to receive 10 years from now? There's no evidence in the record as to what she would be receiving. All they're saying is I want dollar for dollar everything I put into Social Security. Well, that would be great for everybody, but that's not what the Social Security system is. That's why it's intangible. That's why Congress knows that there are all of these excluded pension plans out there where people are not required to participate.
So Congress knows this is going on, and your opposing counsel is saying, well, this isn't fair.
Well, the question is whether it's legal, and they have created a social insurance system and have specifically said it is not divisible by state courts. If they wanted to affect a change because of police and fire unions, OPPD, NPPD, all of these sorts of places that are excluded from the Social Security system, they could address that. But this holding in Webster should be affirmed by this court, and a bright white line, which is everybody in Nebraska does not have to hire an actuary and an accountant to value an expected stream of income that Congress may or may not allow at a time when you may or may not retire 62, 67 and a half. Do you live? What is your life expectancy? And put those on balance sheets. We've never done that because it's not an asset.
I want to explore another aspect of this with you. And I think we understand that the offset, directly or indirectly, is off the table. But we have a rule in Nebraska in division of property that allows between one-third and one-half. What I want to explore with you is how does that rule interplay with the application of the Dinges decision and the Webster decision. Dinges, I think I recall, said you can at least consider Social Security. Can't offset, can't do math, you don't look at extreme of expectancies or any of that. But if you had a situation, for example, to give another hypothetical, where you have, I'll use a husband who has an earnings record, is going to receive Social Security, has been in the working world and has accumulated marital assets, we'll say a farm that has expanded dramatically in value, and you have a spouse who has not been in the working world, has been at home all her life, taking care of children, and now they're being divorced. Would you contend that the trial court, in its consideration of equity and applying the one-third to one-half rule, cannot take into account that the husband's going to be receiving a stream of Social Security and the wife may not?
In property division, yes. As counsel said, you can consider all sources of income for purposes of alimony. So the equity argument provides you relief in an alimony argument, which is not the point here. And I also would note that the statement of error that is filed by the appellant in this case says the court erred in finding David's retirement funds, which he contributed in the same percentage, would have contributed to Social Security, should be divided equally. He's not asking for equitable relief. He's asking for a dollar-for-dollar set-off. And whether you follow Webster or the line of cases under Gingis, everybody says can't apply numbers.
Your point being, with respect to the issue in this case, it can't be fixed by focusing on the pension division. It might
correct.
Be able to be made more equitable if the entire marital estate were in play.
Well, marital estate, to me, as the divorce lawyer, means the property to be divided. The marital dissolution
items,
action means
other items in other than the pension plan. That's what I'm saying.
No, I don't think that
you don't
can.
Think so.
Again, I do not believe that the law, as dictated under Webster, says cannot, as you say, do directly, indirectly what you cannot do directly. Because in the end, you're taking money that some value. And not giving it to the spouse to equalize some imbalance in the scale that focuses on some value of the Social Security stream of payments.
Did I hear you correctly in response to Justice Castle's question that the stream of income or the funds in Social Security could be considered an alimony?
That is correct. I believe that and in Nebraska, you can even conclude income from non-marital sources. And that's what you really have with Social Security. It's like if you had $4 million farm that was generating income, the courts consider the income from the non-marital farm for purposes of determining alimony all the time, and the stream of income that would be received from Social Security would be a very similar off-the-balance sheet sort of asset that's generating income that can be taken into consideration in an alimony decision. But this is not the appeal before you. They have appealed the property division. They
based
want
on,
to set off.
Based on Social Security.
Based on Social Security.
But if they didn't appeal based on Social Security, the trial court could clearly give the wife one-third instead of one-half.
Well, that's true.
Just
true,
as long as the court doesn't mention Social Security.
Yeah, in her balance sheet, she clearly was intent on getting a 50-50 division of the marital estate. Social Security is not part of the estate.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the